Now, get ready for Garden Talk, hosted by Len Giddix on WTIC News Talk 1080. Call in now with your garden questions, 860-522-WTIC or 800-966-WTIC.
Nothing's quite as charming as working in the garden.
Talk 1080. It's a wonderful Saturday afternoon, a little nippy out there. Today we have the Notorious Lobster Bob and Scott Riel from...
What, am I not notorious?
Not yet.
Well, you are.
Well,
I'm working on it.
More of a desperado, I think.
I'm just happy I made it here. I almost got blown off the Putnam Bridge.
Well, and of course, thanks to Winterberry Gardens for letting Scott... roam free today.
And a big shout out to our guys who are working the new COVID village down at Rensselaer Field. We have been an integral part of that since the very start. In particular, and I've already shouted him out once on the show in the past month, Tony Graziani, who is our man on station, who has literally been making sure this thing is up and running. It's amazing what he's been called to do since he's been there.
I mean, does that include the tents?
Helped to make sure that tents got set up with mafia block and stuff, so they'll, you know, high winds that Bob was just talking about don't carry everything away. He's putting down gravel. He's pushing stalled cars out of line. He's bringing gasoline to people that run out. He is just really keeping everything pinned down. And that operation would not work without him. So a shout out to my new hero and coworker, Tony Graziani.
There you go. Well, today is, what, the 23rd of January?
Yeah.
It's getting there, huh? Spring's a-coming.
Yeah. I can't feel it yet, but,
no.
Well, I can't feel my fingers. I can't feel my toes.
<You're on> the
By the way, if you'd like to call in with any and all of your gardening questions, comments, whatever, we'll take your calls at 522-9842, 1-800-966-9842.
People are starting to think about spring out there. I had a rash of phone calls Thursday, Friday, and went out. There's a bunch of appointments to get folks set up for the spring. So it is on people's minds, and it should be.
I checked in with a couple.
Until next week.
One snow just takes that right out of everybody's picture.
It's actually been very nice weather for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Why not? Anyway, today is, what is today? National Pie Day.
Ooh. Is that like pie you eat or the...
Is it the P-I or is it the P-I-E?
Well, funny,
because I've been fooled by this before.
Funny you should ask. Okay, and you wonder where that pi, pi, the number came from, and the name for it came
from. It sounds Greek.
Yeah. Well, what is that?
That would be 3.14.
And that is the pi, pi, right?
That is the start of it anyway.
Well, if you put it in a mirror, what does it spell?
Oh, wow.
Isn't that something?
I had never, ever
thought that today.
Of that. That is...
So it wasn't
so
that.
So if you do put it in the mirror there, gentlemen, Len has flipped it around with a big old Sharpie that
If you put it in the mirror, it spells pi.
It spells
try that.
Pi.
3.14. That's the pi number. Of course, it goes on infinitum.
It goes on. There's whole booklets. Published.
And then hold that number up to a mirror. It will spell P-I-E.
And you can't argue with math.
Oh, boy. Yeah, statistics.
Yeah.
And other lies. Anyway, pi has been around, P-I-E has been around since the Egyptians, evidently, in one form or another.
Really?
Yeah.
We've nailed it down.
Yeah. And I spent all morning baking individual pies here in memory of Pi Day.
Yes, you did.
We have cherry, we have blueberry, and we have apple.
Very traditional.
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't put any cheddar on the
red, white, and blue combo.
Yes, man.
I'll have to eat one of each.
But there's enough there for each of you.
Yeah, I'm sure Len probably did bake it because I haven't seen Table Talk pies around in a long
time. That's not Table Talk, no.
That's what I mean. You must have baked it because I haven't seen Table
there
Talk pies in a long time.
Thank you. Today is also National Handwriting Day.
Ooh, I'm better at pie.
Yeah.
I know. And you know what? The kids today, and I'm talking teenagers and 20, 25-year-olds, just don't use cursive anymore.
You can't cursive. Right. They don't use punctuation anymore. They don't use any of that
We're back
stuff.
To hieroglyphics with emojis.
Emojis is a return to pictographs. I agree.
Yeah.
And the worst part about it is they can't add two and two and come up with four.
Well, that's another show altogether.
There's no worst part
to
this.
Have
changes change. It's going to come. Technology is going to override what old folks did. You know, we're not still churning our butter, are we?
Yeah, well, I still got my stone and chisel.
Yeah, sure. And you can split rocks with pins and feathers.
I can.
Yeah. Well, I know how to do that, too, but I've done it, but it takes a lot longer than just doing it with a
Hey, let's go to Ann in Weathersfield. What do you say? Hey, Ann, welcome to Garden Talk. Are you there, Ann?
Yes.
There she is.
There you are.
Can we bring her up a little, Joey?
I can ask a question now?
Yeah, definitely.
Sure.
Okay. So last year I moved to a new house and I put in a pretty big garden, and I've been a gardener for like 40 years.
Hey, Ann?
Yes?
Can you speak up? Are you on a speakerphone?
Yes.
Could you get off the speakerphone, please?
Is that better?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
There we go.
So my question is, my garden was semi-successful last year. And I cook a lot, so I put a lot of compost in it. But this year I want a better, and I was very religious about watering it because of how little water we got. But I was wondering if you had any recommendations as to what else I could put in it to make it grow healthier vegetables.
Okay, so this is a vegetable garden.
Yes.
And it is a tilled vegetable garden, not a raised bed. Or is it
I didn't hear what you said.
Are you tilling the garden?
I did once. I had it tilled by someone at the end of the season to get the compost into the ground.
Mm-hmm. No problem.
Okay. So from here on out, my first recommendation would be don't do that. Let's not till. Tilling exposed.
Don't
do it. So tilling, as you're incorporating that stuff into the soil, there's a little helpful action there, but it's nothing that rain wouldn't have accomplished for you. Rain and water moving down and moving the biology, which is really the important part of the compost. The organic matter is good. It gives the biology a place to live, but the biology is the important thing that releases nutrition to the plants.
Especially with compost.
We use compost, and one of the reasons it's so great, it has a lot of living biology in it. So that is the secret to organic gardening, where it's little protozoas, little paramecium, guys like amoebas and flagellates and cilia. It's eating the bacteria and releasing the nitrogen from the bacteria. Bacteria is the highest nitrogen creature on the planet.
And they form layers in your soil. They have little zones.
Yeah, everybody kind of finds their own individual place.
That's
it's like
right.
The roots in your garden almost.
Right. The other thing, so what you don't want to disturb those little communities because they're all buddies and they all talk together and stuff like that, and they work together. The other thing that you can do is to use a straw mulch, and a fairly thick mulch.
Absolutely. You want it fairly thick for two reasons. One, it's going to incorporate into the soil very quickly because it is high nitrogen, so those bacteria in the soil are just chopping at the bit to get at all that nitrogen so they can increase their population, and like antelopes increasing their population, that creates a mast food source for all the other guys who are going to go in there and eat them. And most of your amoebas, ciliates, flagellates eat 10,000 bacteria a day. That and for every 6 bacteria they eat, they release 5 parts nitrogen.
Poop.
What Dr. Elaine Ingham calls
the
poop loop.
I've used straw before, but I noticed one year I almost went crazy because where I bought the straw, it had so many seed heads in it that I ended up with straw growing.
That's not straw. You have to be very specific to ask for straw and not hay. Hay is going to mess you up.
Hay is for horses.
Exactly, Bob.
Wheat straw is probably the best.
Yeah. I've used rye straw before.
And that also germinates.
That's another pretty clean one.
And then
where do you get it?
You can go to a hardware store somewhere and pick up it's called mainly mulch. It comes in a bag. It's like half the size of a bag of peat moss.
So here's the thing I don't like about
it. Well, I know you don't, but put that it doesn't in have here, the seed.
But mainly mulch doesn't have seed, and if that's your main consideration. Right. But mainly mulch is also pasteurized.
Yeah.
And one of the things I love about straw is the flagellates that I was just talking about. If you just dump straw in a glass of water and then suck some of that water out, throw it on a microscope, it's loaded with flagellates. Mm-hmm. Loaded with it. So I like to use, you know, a good old-fashioned bale.
Yeah.
I get it, mine, just to throw out a name, at Shag Bark often I'll get mine, but sometimes I can find
sometimes
it down at my local agway.
Right.
Sometimes you can't find it around.
Yeah.
And once you put the straw down, it's a yellow wheat straw, and it's the shaft of the wheat. And what you can do is once you put it down, take a pitchfork and just stick the pitchfork in, move it back and forth. That'll open up holes, and it'll allow it to fall down.
Yep. You don't. I mean, that would be the only addition that I have. You don't want to add too much more compost all at once. You said you put a lot in, because what that's going to do, depending on your soil, is you're going to make it very dense, and it won't drain well.
There are other people out there. If you want to look at nutrient density, look for a friend of mine, Dan Kittredge, who is doing things with organic gardens where he is making additions of things like borax and some other trace minor elements that he insists brings up the nutrient density in your food that you're growing. Yeah. But, I mean, we could do a whole show on nutrient density.
Well, Ann, I hope that answers
you. I went out when I met my neighbor who has a garden. He was pouring half-diluted skim milk on his tomatoes, and he had the most awesome tomatoes I ever saw.
Of course,
I said, what are you doing?
Oh, that's fish milk for the calcium.
Yeah, we've been talking about fish milk for years, and the calcium's great for the blossom end rot, but again, we're creating a food for lactobacillus, yet another great positive plus bacteria in the soil.
Hey, Ann, we have to take a short break. Do you have any more to ask?
Last question was, should I put cow manure in there?
All right, well, we'll answer that. We'll answer that right after we take a break. Can you hang on?
Okay.
Okay. Joe, can we put Ann on hold? And we're going to take a short break, but we'll be back with more Garden Talk and Ann right after this.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go.
And welcome back to Garden Talk. Now, before you say Len is crazy for playing this bop music, I just want to remind you, Christmas is over. Even the Eastern Orthodox Christmas is over. So would you please turn your Christmas lights off if you're not going to take them down? You won't be fined by the state until, what, Groundhog's Day. I think that's the day that they start fining people to have
them. I think so, yeah.
But just, you're wasting electricity. Turn your Christmas lights off at night. And then when the weather gets a little warmer, okay, take them down. I understand that. But I've seen way too many Christmas lights on.
Everybody still has the spirit.
No. Now it's making me angry. Okay. And I have to say that the previous public service announcement is not necessarily the opinion of this station or Entercom Broadcasting.
Just to add into your little discussion on Christmas tree lights.
Oh, we're going to. Let me get Ann first.
Christmas tree that she turned into a Valentine's Day tree.
Oh my gosh! Anyway, hey Ann. Well, thanks for hanging on. So you had a question about manure.
Yes, please.
Okay, Scott, you want to handle that?
Sure. So Most times of the year, the answer is no, 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 no. We are not putting down fresh cow manure.
Now, composted cow manure is a different
story. Composted cow manure, that bag you bought from the store, that's all fine. But, boy, that fresh stuff, it's usually verboten. Except for this time of year. So you could take fresh cow manure, put it down at this point. All the moisture and stuff that's going to permeate down and run through with that is rich in nutrient solutions and biologies. This is the sole time of year you would be safe to put down fresh cow manure.
Or you can do it a little bit earlier if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
November.
Is horse manure just as good?
No. And the reason why is stomachs. Cow has four, horse has one. By the time we're through four stomachs, we've digested all those weed seeds.
Oh, okay.
Goes through the horse, not so much. So even okay. Those rye seeds and things that we're talking about, hay is for horses. Well, that hay has seeds, and the horse does not take care of those seeds in quite the same fashion that a cow does.
Now, if you have a horse barn, a house, a horse barn near you, and there is a lucrative stockpile of horse droppings that's 3 years old, say. It's been composted for 3 years, laying in a pile.
If it's been composted. But often you will see, if you just have a pile of horse manure, it's a weed pile, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Not a problem.
You're welcome, man. Thanks so much. Okay. Oh, pretty much. My caller screen is usually a dark green. Now it is red.
Is it red because there's a dearth of callers or
no?
Valentine's Day.
That's good.
Yeah, 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. Look at that. What great timing. What I'd like to know, what I'd like to ask all of our listeners, and I'm going to ask you guys too, what are the gardening implements? I mean, the catalogs are out now. They're filled with all kinds of gizmos and gadgets. What are the
the ones you can't do without.
Ones you can't do without. Okay. You've got them. You've always had them.
And then, the other side of that is the flip side is what's that tool
gimmick
you've got that you found was just completely
useless?
And
the gimmicks that are out there are just.
There are many.
Every. And they just want your money, that's all.
Yeah.
So let us know. We'd like to know because we haven't tried them all.
But we've tried some of them, and we got some we really like, and we got some that stink on ice.
That are still in the shed.
That's right. That's rusting away.
In the corner.
We'll be back right after this. Caballeros, it's time for the Garden Mariachi Scott Reel.
And I'm
sing of the garden.
Sing of the garden. Well, we were talking a lot about biology this morning, and again, one of the things that can really damage biology, and with an event coming up Tuesday, I think we ought to talk a little bit about snow melt.
Okay.
And snow melting products.
We're getting snow on Tuesday.
Some of those, I guarantee you we're getting some snow. Whether it'll end up being a big plowable event or not, it's kind of right on the line right now. But I will be in somebody's driveway on Tuesday, that's for sure.
Oh, a stalker, huh?
Yeah, sort of. So one of the things I do when I'm out doing snow removal is spread a good deal of ice melt product. And we use a couple of different kinds because they do different things and they do different things better. So obviously salt has been the old standby for a long time. But as well we know, it's damaging to the plants. Why is it so damaging to the plants? Because it's damaging to the soil biology as well.
It's cheap, though.
It is cheap. And this is one of the reasons, though, why there is not a body of water in Connecticut that has not been found to have additional salinity.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're salting up our water to the point that it's actually showing up in assays. And that's not the best of all possible worlds. Salt is damaging to soil biology and plant material, even in lower doses and even in regular doses. So there are other things you can use that are going to do better for you. And one of the things that we use is particular for folks who are worried about corrosion and degrading their driveways and walkways, we use something called CalMag acetate. You often see it listed as CMA. So we've talked before, calcium and magnesium are absolutely essential to the photosynthesis process. And the only other thing we've added in there is a little bit of acetate to make sure it binds together. So these are both plant-soluble items that can be used. This does not create a brine the way that salt does, so it's not as good a burn-down product. But if you get out and pre-applicate, it does keep water molecules from locking together, so it keeps it from locking down on your driveway and creating that layer of ice that you can't even shovel off, you know, try as you might, and you end up having to chip off later. It'll actually help to prevent that if we've pre-treated, if we get it down beforehand.
So if I pre-treat it, I might not be able to even – I might not have to go out there and shovel if it's like an inch or two?
Again, not a burn-down product, but it'll make sure that that bottom layer doesn't bond.
Even if I walk on it or a car rolls over?
Generally, even if you walk on it or a car.
That's
so
great.
There's one of the big benefits to calcium magnesium. The other is this doesn't hurt plants. It's actually beneficial in the long run. Canadian government, it is, on the other hand, a good deal more expensive. It's generally almost twice the price of the regular salt products. But if you're in those garden-sensitive areas, if you're really concerned about pets whose actual pads and stuff are coming in contact with salt and absorbing salt through it, their pads and their skin, this is, again, a much pet-friendlier product. The corrosive index, if you're worried about those pavers and walkways, it is about as corrosive as municipal tap water. The Canadian government has gone entirely to using calcium magnesium acetate for its road treatments because it is better for the environment in the long
term. Does it track in like salt?
It tracks in a little worse than salt. One of the things that I found is, it's got that kind of white chalky consistency usually that tracks a little more. But again, you don't need that much to create that bonding layer that keeps it easy to shovel or plow or take care of on the bottom. And most importantly, my reason for bringing it up, plant friendly, pet friendly, driveway and walkway friendly.
Well, that's
so
good to know.
I think it might be worth that little extra bit of money.
Well, certainly look at the situation that you're in.
Yes.
And you know, it may not be for everything you have, but certain spots.
Exactly. So certain spots could definitely warrant the use of this.
And the
all ice melts are not created equal.
Right.
That's my main point here. No. So as you're looking to purchase your ice melt, maybe look beyond price point and look at some
of
the other
clients. Is
that
something that's available in some of the big box stores? Or?
Yes, generally you can find CMA. And you'll find it even some of the other regular ice melt products that are out there are touted as being more pet friendly. Perhaps there's a Magic O treatment. Magic O was a soy based de-icer that helps make your regular salt more friendly. But look over that bag of ice melt. See how much of it's salt. See how much of it's CMA. See if you can't find one that's going to work better for you and your walkways and your pets and your plants.
There you go.
Also, you know, I've got a dog, and we tend not to take her out for a walk down the road. Only because you look outside now, you're supposed to get snow next week. Well, they'll be out pre-treating, so if you're out walking with the dog, you're going to drag it in on her paws.
You've got to have little booties on.
The good news is a lot of times if you're seeing them out pre-treating, the chances are they are probably using a CMA product.
Yeah.
They're probably using the Cal Magnesium product. Either that, or I know there's some other ones that have come up, some grain-based things that are more friendly. You really don't go out and pre-treat with a brine, so the chances are they're not using a salt product.
Yeah, yeah. I've tried to pre-treat with a brine just for kicks and giggles. Well, it didn't work at all.
Yeah.
You want kicks and giggles? I had so much ice on my driveway last year one time. And I went and got my weed torch.
I've tried that, too.
I got the weed torch, and I went out and where I had some real heavy spots, I kicked in that weed torch.
I hear Elon Musk does have a flamethrower out there.
That's what it is.
There's a little bit of trouble around it right now. You might want to wait and see how it all goes.
Well, I'll tell you what. When I tried it, it was on one of those ice storms, and there was a large amount of ice out here.
And it was like 3 days, and the ice hadn't melted.
Yeah, and it really used a lot of propane to get a very little bit done.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the carbon release to the atmosphere versus utility.
And then when
that
the
one.
Asphalt started melting, I
yeah, that's when you really gotta cut it out. Yeah,
okay, hey, let's go to Bob. I don't know where
Hello.
You're from, Bob, but welcome to Garden Talk.
I'm on a cell phone.
Okay.
And I had a bit of information regarding the use of fresh cow manure.
Okay.
My wife's cousin's husband.
Once removed on your father's side?
A few years ago, put fresh cow manure down on his garden as usual. Developed that listeria disease that killed them. So you always have to be careful of those kinds of situations.
With any animal, fresh animal manure, yes, you do.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But this time of year, the chances of a listeria turning into just a widespread break in his soil. The good news is when we're using compost and stuff in our garden already, those flagellates and amoebas that I were talking about, they're eating bacteria like listeria. We actually found that there was E. coli remediation simply through the action of earthworms digesting soils and digesting some of these big bacteria and stuff out of the soils. So if you've put it down long beforehand and you're maintaining good organic practice, even the bad guys, you know, sure, a lot of the good guys get eaten in the bacteria, but those bad guys get eaten right along with them by flagellates, amoebas, ciliates, all those guys. That's why we're saying this time of year, it's cooler. There's not going to be an issue with huge bacterial blooms, temperature being part of what creates a bacterial bloom. But you've got plenty of time for it to mitigate. But your cautionary tale is well taken.
Well, hopefully some people will learn to use protective equipment when they're doing such deeds.
Yeah. If you're using fresh stuff, you know, you want to use gloves and wash up afterwards.
Yep, absolutely.
Good enough.
But you can
Thank you.
You know, if you get fresh cow manure in the summer, or you don't want to put it on your plants right then and there, but if you got a compost pile, spread it upon your compost pile. Mix it in.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that will help break it down, break down your compost.
Yeah, mix it with some browns, which in this case, leaves, so old leaves, paper. Paper is a great addition to the garden, as it is high carbon, and that's really what we're looking for. So a great way to recycle your paper is right into your compost heap.
I agree. Well, thank you so much for your great show.
Thank you, Bob,
sir.
For listening.
Thanks for calling in with a good tip.
Okay. Yeah. Because we can't see it, we don't realize the cacophony of things that are going on in the soil. And it is just remarkable when you do take a look at it, when you read about it, even look through a microscope. My gosh.
Well, that was my eye-opener, was spending a lot of regular time when I was production manager at Safe Lawns verifying our compost teas and seeing what kind of lively action we had going when we were putting that stuff out. Yeah. And I was frankly floored working with great people like Dr. Elaine Ingham. I got informed pretty quickly that teaspoonful of soil that you dug up out in the, as Dr. Ingham used to tell me, let's go outside, we'll take a teaspoon full of soil, and I'll name the first unidentified organism after me, and I'll name the second one after you, but we'll find at least two in that soil. We have no idea.
Nope.
We have the most minimal ideas of what is going on in the soil, in soil biology. The only book on nematodes was written in the 1930s in Germany. And there's no translation. If you get the book, you better learn some German.
Nematode is the German word, you know.
I was guessing it was a little more to the Latin side of things, but.
Right, yeah. It means a little wiggly worm, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I can make stuff up like
you can.
Yes, I can.
And
but I think I read once that in a spoonful of very healthy, active microbial soil, there are more organisms in that teaspoon of soil than there are people in the world.
Tens of billions of bacteria, mm-hmm. hundreds of thousands of the flagellates that I was talking
about.
Yeah, those
are the big
and
guys.
Even some bigger guys that eat some of the flagellates. So, yeah, every teaspoonful of soil is a teeming variety of life, if it's in good shape.
Yep. And it's something, one of the topics I had today is, you know, we use our senses, our sight first, probably, touch and taste coming after that, sound, but the smell of the soil, the smell of the seasons, you can tell, you know, when a storm is coming on, a snowstorm.
Petrichor.
Yeah.
Petrichor is the word for the smell after a rain.
That's right.
And you can smell just life coming up out of the ground.
That's right. And a lot of that is due to the bacteria and fungi in the soil coming
Absolutely.
To life. And in the fall, it's the decaying Reverses. Leaves that are on there.
That sweetness of the smell of decay.
Yep.
That's the carbohydrates.
Yep. And then, you know, after a lightning storm. Mm-hmm. You have that fresh smell
That's
of ozone.
Ozone, yeah.
Yeah. So, it, you know, use all your senses out in the garden. Gardeners are famous for that, but it's just not smelling the roses. It's smelling the soil.
I asked Dr. Elaine Ingham, probably the world's leading soil biologist, how one could tell if compost was bad. And the world's leading expert says if it smells bad, it's bad.
That's right.
She relies on a sense of smell, well, and a binocular microscope. But her first sense is use the nose.
Being a mushroom grower for 16 odd years, and being in the composting operation for most of that, that's exactly how you have that easy.
Absolutely, first indicator.
If it smells deep and musty and earthy, you're doing a good job. If it's sour, you better get some air in there. You got too much water in there, you better get it aerated. It's very simple, straightforward. But hey, anyway, we could talk about soils all day. As a matter of fact, we probably
just might.
Will. Yeah, I think so. 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. And TIC numerically is 9842. So 522-9842. 1-800-966-9842. Give us a call. Tell us what you like about the smell of soil, and have you smelled your lawn soil lately? If you're using the conventional method, the 1-2-3-4, you probably can't smell squat. But if you're organic, you can dig in there and smell it like the forest would smell the soil in the forest. It's a remarkable thing. Anyway. Or what's your most important garden tool? What's the one you can do without? It's been rusting in the shed. We'd love to know. And we're going to take a short break, but we'll be back right after this.
Let's all sing like the birdies sing.
Tweet, 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 tweet.
Let's all sing like the birdies sing.
Wipe that smirk off your face,
Real. I was just thinking of how I've loved the lack of tweets lately.
No. The whole point of this song is to remind me that you want to, because the tweeting of birds, the singing of birds is communication.
Yeah.
And they're communicating different things depending on the different seasons. And in about a month, maybe less, depending on the weather, depending on the day length, you're going to hear the difference in the bird songs. They're going to go from a winter song of "Hi there, how are you? Get out of my way," that sort of thing, to "Hi honey, how are you?"
We're cataloging crow right now at such a speed over the past few years that they're thinking within the next 2 or 3 years, we may have a human ability to communicate with crows.
Or they certainly have an ability to communicate with us now. They are talking, well, they're not talking crows, but they're mimicking crows.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And I was reading an article a week or two ago about how interspecial bird communication can be. Mm-hmm. Well, and that blue jay is warning. He's not just warning blue jays. Everybody pays attention to
him. Of course they do. You just have to watch the bird feeders.
Yeah.
But, you know.
The watchdog.
Yeah. They have this hawk call. And you can, it's a little bit different than a regular hawk. You can tell. And they're not quite sure whether that is to shoo the other birds away from the feeders because a hawk's in the area, so they can come down and have their way with the seed, or what they're doing. They're just fooling around.
The more you look at nature, the more we start to study and really, you know, push the microscope in there and study hard and look, we're finding it's definitely more complex than we'd ever thought.
Oh, yeah, you know.
And that we'd assumed and called these dumb animals and assumed that plants don't, you know, are even dumber yet and don't talk to each other. And we're finding out all of the above to be untrue.
We should be less egocentric.
Hey. And less speciocentric.
Yeah. Hey, Gene, welcome to Garden Talk.
Well, good morning. How are you today?
We are doing great, my friend. How can we
help
you?
You know, I wait for Saturday to come around. I enjoy your show that much.
Well, you're too good to us, really.
And for most of my life, I've been gardening, and starting with my grandfather, my father, myself. We had about 8,000 square feet of gardens at our house.
Wow. Yep.
So that's quite a bit. But anyways.
Yeah.
Starting with my grandfather, he had some huge chicken coops in his backyard, and we had to put wooden barrels under the eaves and collect the water, and that was for the garden. And half of those we had to fill with cow manure, and we would water the garden with that water from these barrels.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a combination of rainwater and cow manure. We never put fresh cow manure on the garden. We just watered with that.
Yeah.
And we had phenomenal results.
A lot of people do that if they raise fish to any extent, like catfish or whatever, take it out of the pond rather than, you know, out of the well.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it was a very successful thing for all my life, and we never had any problem and never used a hose to water our garden.
That's something.
We had to carry, even though we cursed it back in the day, we hated the job, but it was a prerequisite in our house, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, I still use rain barrel and
watering
cans.
Just got to get a chicken or a cow on top of that barrel, and you'll be all set.
Yeah, if I was able to keep the aeration levels up high enough where I wasn't worrying about a layer down bottom that might go anaerobic on me, a little more aeration.
Well, I understand that this is one of the methods of what you just described is one of the methods they use for raising animals in China. The top layer is chickens. The second one on the ground floor is pigs, swine, that eat the chicken manure that falls down. And then the third layer are ducks in a pond on at the base, which the pig manure and
it means any maggots that are dropping through the system go to duck feeding.
Of course,
at the bottom.
Viva la China,
it's important.
Yeah.
Had a good mix of animals on our farm, and that was true. You know, and always the chicken manure went to the garden because it was so high in nitrogen.
Yeah.
Not straight to the garden, though. You can actually burn with chicken manure. You want a little compost on that.
It was a mix. It was always a mix. It never was just a single thing. My father made sure we stayed busy for weeks.
Of course.
In preparation, you know.
And what was he doing in the meantime?
And that was that.
And what was he doing in the meantime?
Well, my father was work. He worked 7 days a week.
Oh, I was going to say supervising.
I can supervise us as well.
Yeah.
And so I carried that throughout my life until I had a stroke.
Well, it's a good experience. That industrious attitude is.
Well, I'll tell you, I defy you today to question most young people, and I don't think you'll find 1 in 10 that could actually raise a garden.
Oh. Well, that's changing.
It is.
They're getting back into it, but not like it was.
No, they're not learning it from their grandfathers.
They're learning it from
mothers.
The internet.
They're learning it from the internet, exactly.
Yeah. And that's one of the – because the internet, one can find almost every opinion represented.
Yeah.
That's why we do what we do here because we think that there's some good information out there, but there's some bad information out there, and sorting through it is what's going to bring the new generation.
To listen, you really have a lot to offer.
Well, thank you, sir.
I listen to you week after week, and I tend to, I usually agree with almost everything you say.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm going to have to bring that to my wife's attention.
Do you even?
So thank you so much for your service.
Bob.
Thank you so much for your phone call, sir.
Have a nice day.
You too.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
You know, I wonder if he likes the bump music. You know, that could be. Let me see.
It could be.
You know, he was talking about having an 8,000-square-foot garden. And I remember when I was a kid, everyone in my grandfather's neighborhood, every other house had chickens, they had ducks, they had something.
Those guys had the victory gardens. Yeah. They'd had the gardens that brought them through the Great Depression.
That's correct.
A garden for them was a necessity, a backup, a fail-safe plan for if things go south. And I don't see that in gardening as much anymore. Hey, and it's not that hard. I have a fail-safe for my garden, and I have a bunch of those big old orange daylilies mixed with ostrich ferns. And it takes the border on the back of my fence and keeps that looking fairly pretty. But in an emergency, those are vittles.
Exactly.
Those are things that can feed me. Top to bottom on a daylily, and certainly preferably new shoots on the ostrich fern, but you could eat them later if you wanted.
You can eat them and you can preserve them.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Preserving things is coming back also. But again, we learn it on the internet.
You know, I've got Jerusalem artichokes over at this part, over my wild guys. You know, there's things that you can plant that you don't need to eat right then and there, but they may help you out in hard times.
Yeah, and you're ready for the big one.
Yeah.
Now you can look up on the internet. I was going through my bookcase, and I must have 50 gardening that I've bought over the course of a year.
Yeah.
And now all that information, I can get it off my phone.
Oh, it's easy now. Well, we have to take a short break for news, weather, sports, and whatnot. But,
and pie.
And, oh, that's right, pie. But we'll be back right after this. Would have meant. No, I can't remember what I was going to do. You caught me off guard.
It's sad watching somebody age right before you.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'll get to it, and then you'll be sorry.
Probably.
I was going to.
Usually.
Oh, my goodness. Welcome back to Garden Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. Ow! I know what I was going to talk about. I am so proud of myself because this is a great thing for the garden in my little world. As you know, I use the K-Cup dispenser, okay? I'm pretty – I don't drink that much coffee. I drink a cup, and maybe that's it. I like it perfect. But I always can't get the good coffees that you can get at the co-op all ground up that are gross.
Oh, one should grind one's own.
No. Yeah, see, you're getting too snooty. I'm not talking to
snooty. No. Snooty is my ex-boss, Josh, who both roasts and grinds
his
own.
Well, I understand that's the best. But anyway.
It is. It's amazing.
I've been chastised for using K-Cup because of the plastic, and then you throw it out.
We could get a stack of K-Cups to the moon with what gets used.
Not anymore, bucko.
True.
Not anymore because, you know, and I tried the plastic containers or whatever.
How about the reusables, the reusable K-cups?
They leak. If they're screened, they leak the grinds through, and that's bitter on the bottom. But now, ta-da, I just saw these maybe a month ago, and I picked them up finally. It's called the Perfect Pod Easy Cup. They're little filters that fit into the reusable.
The old reusable K-cup, so no more grind.
And the best thing about it is they have a little, coming over. They have a little hat on them, paper hat, that seals the whole thing up entirely. I use an espresso mix, and it makes a wonderful cup of coffee. No bitterness, nothing. But use the espresso grind with any of your favorite coffees.
Saving money, ecologically friendly.
I could dump that right in the compost pile.
Winning.
Yep. So I am very proud of myself for discovering that, using that. And to all my opponents over the years, all I have to say is nanny, nanny, nanny.
Neener, neener, neener.
Yeah, that's right. Welcome back.
Indeed.
Welcome back to Garden Talk. Sorry about that little faux pas. But we have Joey, who do we have on the phone line? I'm not hooked up.
We have
Ed Barkhamsted. Welcome to Garden.
Ted.
Ted. Oh, it's Ted. I mentioned they have an Ed, too, in
Barkhamsted. Hello.
Hi.
Hey,
how
Ted.
Are you, Ted? Welcome
to
Garden Talk.
Hello.
So,
hello. Yeah, we're here. Go ahead.
Okay. My question was about care for indoor primrose.
Indoor primrose?
Indoor primrose. So just picked one up at the local garden center and...
Yeah, picked up four of them.
Ah.
And
you should have lovely fragrances wafting through your home shortly.
Yeah, but they're not... I'm not sure I'm treating them correctly. I want to know how much water... I'm bottom watering them.
Yeah, that shouldn't be an issue. They're not quite as finicky as an African violet. They like a good bit of shade, so pushing it directly into a sunny window is probably not the best idea. Probably want them a little off to one side or the other.
All right, I've got them in a sunny window with shades, but I guess it's too much light.
It might be.
They're
definitely a shade plant. Mine come back in the garden regularly, so my suggestion for those indoor primroses is turn them into outdoor primroses as soon as Mother Nature allows. I've had mine for decades. Do divisions off them all the time. I've spot them around the garden as necessary. It's a real old-school grandma's garden kind of plant that's fallen out of favor. American growers have kind of started to eschew them because the Canadians have got this one sewn up tight. That loony is trading at a pretty good price point at the moment, and so it's hard to beat the Canadians at growing the primroses. They like them because it's a good hardy plant.
Oh, it's dead hardy.
I don't understand why they have fallen out of favor in the garden, other than it has this connotation as an old grandma's plant.
But they come in every color of the
rainbow. I don't either. I'm glad to know that. I will. I've got plenty of shady spots, so.
And on the moister side, too, you can plant them around ponds and stuff at the edge.
And so the one you're – yeah, it'll take a fair amount of moisture. Glenn's exactly right. But for around the ponds and the edge, I might suggest the Japanese primrose, Primula japonica, rather than – those things will do marvelously, brook or pond side, even take, the occasional overflow if we get a little bit of flooding. And hey, that's a – It works very, very – the ones you have are probably Primula vulgaris, one of the cultivars thereof. And Len's right. Comes in just about every color you can think of,
right,
including a number
of
bicolor ones.
In terms of watering, will half an inch of water in the bottom of the container that the outside container they sit in?
That might be
a little much.
Yeah.
For Primula vulgaris, I certainly want to keep it evenly moist. I don't think I'd want to keep them wet.
Okay.
If we were doing, a Primula japonica, the Japanese primrose that I was talking about, those things can practically stand in water and do.
How about feeding?
Should not be a necessity for your plants, as those are pretty new and probably have a good shot of feed. I feed almost nothing in my shade gardens other than, you know, just the
falling leaves do everything.
Yeah, exactly. The falling leaves and the layer of mulch, often I'll use compost to mulch and just do a top dress that way. Beyond that, there's not a lot of needs. This is a really not fussy plant. But I think it's just gotten a bad rap because Grandma really liked it and used it as a perfume scent, too.
Who was that Connecticut gardener who just loved primroses? She was down from Fairfield County. I forgot her name. I'll look her up. She always promoted the primrose.
Yeah, it's a good plant. There's a lot of a lot of species that we don't see in the garden that often. Drumstick primrose, which is a great one with a kind of, you know, big round head on it. The old cowslips, which were the original yellow, one of the original yellow forms that native to more to Europe. I believe all of these are mostly European natives.
Yeah.
But I can't say I've ever seen one out of place. This is not an invasive. It does not go anywhere but in the garden, and it's best to do from divisions is the easiest way to do. So it's the kind of plant that makes more for you as you go.
What else are
we looking for in early spring other than those bursts of color? You know, and rather than doing it just daffodils and, you know, and just our bulbs, here's this great plant that's going to repeat for you, be perennial, need very little in the way of care, and really going to treat you in the garden for years and years.
Great. Thank you very much.
Hey, you're welcome, Ted. Thank you for calling.
Okay. Bye.
And you can pick up your primrose plants at Scott's Primrose Barn.
I'm gainfully employed elsewhere, and I do not need to be going into business for myself.
Well, the way you were promoting it, I mean,
I'm one of the few people with primroses left in the garden and think they've gotten a very bad rap.
Well, I think people have gotten used to it. Like gladiolus, for example. Gladiolus is another one. Old grandma's old favorite.
Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful border plant in the backside of the border.
Huh? And there's why that one's become less than popular. I think Bob just nailed that one on the head.
I didn't hear him.
He said at every funeral you will see them, and I think that is why. And I think literally the fact that he's right, that does tend to be a funerary arrangement, has just put people off on that one.
Yeah. You see roses.
True.
Dahlias are down on the line, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
But not quite the solid association that, you know. No. Bob, I agree with Bob on that one.
Yeah. You know, we had hellebores back a few years ago.
Yep.
Which Lenten maybe roses. 10 years ago, nobody knew what they
nobody
were.
Knew what a hellebore was.
Now, then all of a sudden, it was like, boom. I remember one of the flower shows we did, and we brought hellebores in, and everybody thought it was a new plant.
My first PPA.
I got one in my yard. It's got to be 30 years old.
My first PPA show, the plant of the year was Heuchera palus purple. A purple Heuchera? And now look.
Oh, I don't want that.
There's 2,200 coming. Yeah, purple? What do you mean? We got Forever Purple. We got the Grape Expectations. Yeah. And these are real purples, not the red leaf thing that, you know. This once we were, everybody was, there was another Heuchera. What had been just a native plant. And known almost solely to native plant associates, you had the Heuchera sanguineas that the British Royal Gardening Group had brought us. So you had like a Heuchera sanguinea Bressingham hybrids. You had a couple of varieties that the English had been coaxing along of this wonderful native genus with a number of species. And then Dan Himes.
Yeah,
came along.
Yeah, he rated everything.
And the leaf show will begin in 10 minutes. And now there are literally thousands of different cultivars in just about every color you can imagine.
Is Bressingham around anymore?
Exactly. You don't even see it. It's been almost superseded, which I think is a loss because the Heuchera sanguineas are the best flowers out of any of the Heucheras.
Well, we'll see.
We could do a whole show on Heucheras. I'll call Dan. He'd come on.
I'm sure he would.
I'm sure he would.
Is he still glowing? 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back with more Garden Talk right after this.
Say, Ernie, you have to be a doctor in this record.
All right, Bill.
Say, Doc.
What is it, Bill?
Do you think I'll live to be 100 years old?
Well, I don't know. Let me see. Do you smoke?
No.
Do you drink?
No.
Do you stay out late at night?
No, sir.
Do you run around with the flappers?
I should say not.
Well, what in the world do you want to live to be 100 years old for?
Well, anyway, there's something wrong with me.
Well, there must be if you come to me.
Well, there will be if I pay you.
Do you mean that you won't pay me?
Why, how much do I owe you, Doc?
Well, now, let me see. You owe me for 4 visits already, and this makes 5.
Well, put it all on one bill, and I'll disappoint you in the lump.
Come, Bill, let's get into the song. All right, Dave.
Oh, tell me, doctor, what can be wrong with me?
Say, have you got a headache or water on the knee?
Well, someone said I'm full of prunes, that's why I'm sad and blue.
Say, here's the only remedy.
Please tell me what to do.
Why, oranges, eat more oranges. From
California, TIC News Talk 1080. How many songs about oranges do you know?
Not many. And I think there's a very obvious reason. Nothing rhymes with orange.
Right.
And they had to make it a plural in order to even get it into a song. 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. Give us a call, just like Kate from Glastonbury did. Hey, Katie, welcome to Garden Talk.
Oh, hi. It's really hard to hear you guys. Holy cow.
I know the volume's been a little screwy today.
We blame Joey.
Yeah.
Okay. It's all his fault.
See, Kate's fitting right in already.
Yep.
First off, love listening to you guys on Saturday. At least it's something to look forward to during the winter months.
Well, thank you.
So thank you for
Well, we're here during the summer, too.
Yeah, but you know what? It's a lot easier to come up with gardening subjects.
Oh, I know. And I listen to you in the summer when I'm out in the garden. But at least during the winter, I have something to look forward to.
There you go.
I had a question. On the lines of compost, everybody's been talking about compost. With regard to chicken bedding, pine shavings with manure mixed in, obviously. How long should that sit in the compost pile before it can be used on the garden?
Nothing should sit in the compost pile. Things should flip about in the compost pile. We should try
How long should it be left to compost?
Well, Katie, let me answer that because I have chickens, and last year I used to use straw all the time, and it was difficult cleaning the coop.
I switched
to pine shavings because they did a wonderful job, and I have a year's worth of poop. I clean my coop once a year. Because it doesn't have a wooden floor. It has an earthen floor.
Right.
And I'll take it right from the coop in October, November, after the garden has been cleaned, and just plop it onto the beds. And there it sits.
Okay.
Now, my only concern, and I don't think it's going to be a problem, but I'm just cautious, is that those are pine shavings. Never used them before. Certainly easier to clean the coop.
Much higher carbon than that straw you were using.
Yeah, it's going to last a long time too. So I'm a little I'm waiting to see about pine shavings. But if you're cleaning that coop every day, no, you don't want to put it on until the fall. And once you put
I'm actually I'm trying to keep it as much of a deep bedding inside the coop as I can.
Yeah.
To sort of harness the composting action and the heat that comes off of it.
Sure.
Yep. So, it worked well for me in the coop. I just don't know how well it's going to work for me in the garden.
Right.
And I do it every year.
I was concerned about, putting it on the garden too soon and having it, having the nitrogen content being too high where things are going to get burned. Is it better to say, clear the coop out, put it in the compost heap for a while, let it sit? I've got 2 separate piles, one for chicken stuff, one for household stuff at the moment, because I wasn't sure. And I wasn't sure if I needed to let that be longer than I would a normal compost
heap. If it's, with the exception of September, if the month ends in an R or a Y, anywhere...
I was going to say you are digging yourself a hole. You are not going to climb out of it.
I was trying to be so clever.
You were.
Anywhere from October to January, February, you can put it right on the soil. But I wouldn't do anything during the other months.
Yeah, and the general rule of thumb for compost is you should not be able to identify anything that went in when you're getting ready to use it.
Right.
So if you're looking for the rest of the season and what the composting ought to be, I don't see a problem with mixing your chicken pile with those vegetables and things like that, as long as we go back to the rule of thumb that it looks like soil now. It doesn't look like a vegetable mixed with pine shavings and chicken pile.
I'll also put wood ashes on.
I mean, I've got in the run itself, I've been using wood chips, and I had two different piles. One was oak and one was pine, but I've been using the pine in the run itself, and I mean that's already starting to turn to dirt basically because they're constantly turning it and pecking through it, and I add to it every so often to give them something fresh to pick through.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's how we used to, the colonials used to clear. They would run pigs on the land first to root out all the stumps, and then they would put the chickens on it to take down all the greens and to scratch everything back to an even level.
Now, is this the first year you're trying pine shavings?
The run is probably more ready to use than even the pine shavings out of the coop itself.
Yeah, just from the fact that they turn it so often, that's probably right.
Katie, is this the first time you're using any pine shavings?
This is my first year with them, period. So, yeah, I decided to go with the pine shavings thinking that they would break down a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Hey, we have to take a break now, Katie. But, hey, give us a call. I'd be interested in how it worked out for you this year, and we'll compare notes.
Okay.
How's that?
And if you could, can you just, when you're talking, just mention what your thoughts are on using a broad fork in the garden?
Oh,
okay.
Sure.
No problem.
Because that was something that I also wanted to ask about.
Yeah, Bob actually touched on it a little bit earlier, but I am happy to expound on that particular tool.
You're happy to expound on anything
this
here.
Is true.
All right. We're going to take a break for news, weather, sports, and a few other things, but there's lots more garden talk coming up right after this. And welcome back to Garden Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. It's time for the Garden Talk Tips of the Week. I know you've been waiting for these. So let's see what we can come up with. Bob, what do you got?
Well, I'm going to go back. Scott has said I've used this before, but I think it's old and it's reliable. While you're sitting here now, there's no snow on the ground. Look out in your yard. See what's got to get done. Start writing it down. So when it comes to April, May, you're not running around like a crazy person trying to do 15 different projects when you could have started in March and did them one at a time.
Plan the work. Work the plan.
Plan what you're going to buy, plants, seeds, whatever, and, you know, get a jump on it. It's a lot easier to go out and spend $30 this week and $20 next week and $10 the week after than it is to go out and spend $350 all at once. It doesn't hurt.
That's right. Especially now when, you know, money could be a little tight after this year.
I mean, there's some places I went by a garden center on the way down here the other day, last week, and they had a big sign up. Seeds are in. So people are garden centers are starting to bring
seeds got wiped out.
A lot of the catalogs I know
wiped out last year.
Oh yeah, and they're going to get wiped out this year. So get them while you can.
Yeah,
and if you don't have your list, you're not going to know what to buy or what you forgot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Plus, on top of it, now's the time. Go through the seed catalog. Look at the 587 varieties of tomatoes that we have, and decide what five or six varieties you want to buy.
And with rareseeds.com, shipping's free, whether it's one package or 100.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of seed companies, Johnny's in particular, you need to have $200 to get free. I'm not spending $200. I'm a frugal.
Well, not with any one company, but I know you. By the end of it all, you've spent $200 on seeds.
No, I haven't.
No?
No.
No.
All right. I am under 50.
Not your age.
Not age, right? No. That's why I started laughing. He's under 50. Hell, I'm not under 50. My garden tip of the week, I'm going to fall back to my earlier rant of the show. Let's go out there and assess our snow melts, whether we're using salt or one of the new soy-based ones or CalMag acetate. Pick the right snow melt for you. Pick the right snow melt for your plants. Pick the right snow melt for your pets. And let's try to make it a little more friendly out there. The Canadian government doesn't use anything but CalMag at this point, just to the nation over, even their DOTs on the highways. And there's a reason for it. So, look over and see what you might do that might be a little friendlier for your garden, for your environment, and for you and your pets.
Where does CalMag come from? Is it mined or is it...
Calcium magnesium. I think the calcium's probably mostly derived from oyster shell and things like that. Where you get magnesium? I don't know. I think there's some mining processes
in Canada
for under the water in the ocean.
Yeah.
But you can get magnesium in a mined situation too. I think so. I do believe it is.
I'll look it up when we get a chance here.
And the acetate, of course, they grind the little small acetates into a fine powder.
Into little acetaters.
You have no idea how many acetates it takes to make a whole bag of CalMag acetate.
You know, and they're hard to raise, too. Mm. There's free-range acetates. There's caged acetates. Anyway. spring bulbs. You probably got your catalogs from the people over in Holland, and now they're asking you to plant more bulbs. No, you know, and the bulbs that you're going to get, well, the corms or bulbs you're going to get right now are the stuff that flowers in summer, not in the spring, summer or fall. The dahlias, gladiolus, acapanthus, the canis.
Colchicums,
irises. Irises are not a bulb, but you're going to order
those. It's a corm.
Yep. You're going to order that now, and you're going to plant it in spring.
Well, and the little Dutch one, the Iris verna, that is almost a bulb.
Well, yes, but and that's really early in the spring.
It is very early in the spring. That's probably not one of the ones you're going to get now.
No, you would plant those probably in the fall. I've got them coming up over here. They come up before the crocus. Mm. It's unbelievable. That is the true sign that spring is here.
Yeah, that and the winter aconite that we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC.
So we were talking about tools earlier.
Let's talk about
tools. We were talking about tools and tools. And Kate suggested that we talk about the broad fork.
Let's talk about the broad fork.
I do not have one yet.
Yet?
Yeah, yet. It's a little bit more of an – it's a two-handed tool, so there's a little bit more to it.
Yeah, but
it'd
be great in your garden.
Would be absolutely perfect in my garden. I've yet to convince she who must be a bid, though, that the expenditure is worthy of the
Now, explain your garden and why it would be so good in it.
Because I do raised beds, but it's just a mounded bed that I kind of keep in shape and add straw and add things to
it. How high are they now? Are they any more than 2 feet?
Stuff breaks down so fast, it's kind of maintained that kind of 18-inch kind of height.
Yeah.
A little bit does flow to the paths in the middle, and I'm still contemplating whether or not I put sides on these things eventually. But I found because we do basically a lasagna gardening kind of thing, all of our stuff just gets added to the top and breaks down and in.
And you're using the straw anyway that's keeping up the sides as much as possible.
That's exactly right. Yeah, there's not a huge amount of flow because we do like to keep a lot of straw in there. So it doesn't break down the rows too fast.
So how would you use this for?
Well, I'm currently using a hay fork to do this, but a hay fork is only about a foot wide.
Yeah.
And the broad fork is very aptly named because they generally tend to be 2.5-3 feet wide. That's almost exactly the width of my rows. So I would be able to stick it into the whole row and pop the whole row from one side to the other. And again, in this purpose, I just want to lift it a little bit because I don't till, but I want to keep it a little looser on top. The top, it's plants breaking down. It's loose to begin with. It's compaction happens down lower in my garden. Yeah. So if I could just get that broad fork in there and just lift it,
just
want
to lift and separate
just a little bit, yeah, just enough to help keep some air in.
It's got tines on it in case anybody doesn't know what it is. It's like a turning fork, but instead of having five tines on a turning fork, this woman may have only three in the same size of a.
I've seen them with eight tines.
I mean, most of them are probably 5 or 6 inches apart. Yeah. So you're not technically picking it. You're loosening the soil, letting the air in.
But if you go online, it's an ancient tool that goes back to the Middle Ages, and you can find people online. You can find video of them doing like a row of eight people turning an entire field. And turning it in like 20-foot swaths every couple of, you know, every 15 seconds, a team of people each using broad forks. There's two handles to most broad forks, too. They're on the outside, so you can really get some upper body strength and some mass in there. It's a great tool.
Let's go to Goldie. I think she's got a comment on the...
Gee.
Oh, Gee? B?
B.
B? Says Goldie. Let's go to Torrington. Welcome to Garden.
Let's let her clarify. Him.
B.
I wanted to talk about some, you were talking about small roses and things. When I was younger, I'd go to my grandparents' house in Plymouth, Connecticut. And first thing I'd do is I'd cut a bunch of rhubarb stalks out of the rhubarb patch they had, take it in the house, and my grandmother would start making rhubarb sauce. So while she was doing that, I'd be outside mowing their lawn. And when I got done with the lawn, I'd come in and she'd have the rhubarb sauce all made. Uh-huh. And she'd serve it over vanilla ice cream.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's a classic. When I was going to school in Scotland, they would use the rhubarb sauce over a bread pudding quite often. Ooh. One of my favorite school lunch desserts.
They had a screened-in porch, and we would sit out on their porch and eat our ice cream and rhubarb sauce and have a couple cocktails, highballs. that was their preference. And they had an arbor with these tiny roses on it. And every year, a small little wren would nest in the middle of the arbor. And we'd watch the arbor and have another highball.
You know, aren't those garden memories, you don't forget them. And you, every time, let's say, the scent of that rose or rhubarb comes up, you have that memory coming back to you.
Oh, yeah. And she made not a sour sauce. She made a more sweeter sauce.
Rhubarb.
I don't know anybody that knows about rhubarb these days.
Oh, you'd be surprised. It's coming back.
I've got my clump.
I do, too.
Yeah.
And half of mine is my grandmother's.
Oh, yeah. No.
The old.
Whatever variety it was.
Yeah, probably only one. Then.
I've got Victoria is the cultivar that I'm growing, and that cultivar goes back 120, 140 years. It's been a good one. It's a nice, sweeter variety that's been around for a long time.
Back again to the Victory Garden.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, perennial food is starting to get more and more looks from people. That thing you plant once and harvest, you know, dozens and dozens of times makes way more sense labor-wise, doesn't it?
I used to garden a lot, and I had a blueberry patch.
There you go.
Three varieties of blueberries that came all through the whole season.
Yeah.
Yep, that's the way to do it.
I got blueberries
and,
all over the yard.
I also had an asparagus patch.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we got one of those, too. Yeah, smart man.
I don't know that many people eat these things anymore.
Well, they do, but they buy them at Big Y.
They buy them and they buy it, and it's a seasonal thing. And there go the asparagus.
Not so much anymore.
Yeah.
We have South America.
Sure, you get that. Yeah. But is that asparagus that you just shipped up from Argentina anywhere near as good as that one you just snapped off in the garden 2 minutes ago when you were boiling right then and there?
Fresh.
Yes, sir.
Eat it fresh, right out of the garden, yeah.
And I used to steam it.
Much preferred.
Absolutely correct. My friend Josh is from Indiana, and his family insists that the recipe for corn is set the water to boiling, go out and pick corn. Get the corn you just picked into the boiling water as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it helps get on the way into the house.
And there you go.
Water, and you drop the fresh corn cobs in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
that's the best way to have it.
If you're going to shuck it on the way to the house.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but, yeah, as quickly as possible.
Pile.
Yeah. It's like that fresh tomato you're noshing down on out in the garden. You know, every second loses a little bit more.
I was wondering why the cherry tomatoes never
made it. Well, when I was younger, I used to have 230
by 60 gardens.
That'd
be called a granddaughter, sir.
And I had the blueberry patch, an asparagus patch. I had a strawberry bed. I had
there you go, another good one.
Never left the garden, did you?
Raspberries, got the raspberries in the yard.
No, we didn't get the raspberries.
No? Oh, it's a pretty easy one.
Gave us the raspberries.
You got to kind of figure out a good way to keep them corralled, but there's some good ways to do that.
Well, we have to take a short break. But
all that's gone. I'm a young 70-year-old kid, so.
There you go. Plenty of kick still in you.
But I can't garden anymore because I've had to give up my home, and I'm now living in an apartment, and I have to go in for knee replacement surgery.
You can remember the garden. That's the important
thing. I can always do that.
There you go.
I'm not worried about the knee replacement surgery. Just because I live alone, I know they're going to want to put me in a convalescent home afterwards.
That
doesn't seem like the place to be these days.
As long as they have a garden you can look out to. We'll see you, my friend. Thank you so much for your call. Okay, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with the rest of Garden Talk right after this.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows and what's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe it. I know they're wrong, wait and see. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me.
Welcome back to Garden Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. Yep, coming to the end of another show. So you can give us a call at 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. What's the one tool that you cannot do without?
My hori-hori knife.
I was going to say hori-hori knife.
Yes. Yeah. I've actually moved it up in the sequence on my belt.
Is it
used
one?
To be Felco's and then hori-hori knife.
Yeah.
And I've switched it now. Hori-hori knife first, Felco's
behind. Now, how many implements on your belt, your garden?
The
belt.
Two.
Oh, I add a regular knife that I use for string and.
I tried to figure. I got my pocket knife in said pocket at all times, so that wasn't really. I tried to figure out a holster for my Japanese half sickle.
Uh huh.
But that curved blade is just really hard to
jab it into your waist.
And it's, got a longer handle, so it just didn't work out. But I do like that tool a lot as well for any number.
Try a backpack.
Yeah, what about, you're going to put your samurai sword back there. What about your tool belt?
Well, I've got my Felco's, I've got my hori-hori knife, and I've got a hammer holder on the left side. Because I have a kind of a long handle that looks like it's got a forked end on it.
Oh, and it's got a hoe on the outside.
Like a little hoe.
Yeah.
And it's probably about 16, 17-inch long handle.
So a cultivator.
And it's nice, like a little cultivator. And it's not very big, but it's enough that when you're digging down, you get to a rock or you get a root or something, you can cut it, chop at it.
Right.
And you've got it.
Oh, that's a perfect hanger for it, too.
Yeah. Yeah, the old hammer loop, sure.
Yeah.
And just a regular hammer holder.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily take it with me all the time, but the hammer holder is on the belt.
Sure, it stays there. 522-WTIC, 1-800.
Of course, then you could always elaborate and go into get a water bottle holder and a pack.
Oh, but then you're 30 pounds.
Yeah.
Then you can got a little case.
Might as well get one of those
in.
You know, web belts.
Next thing, you know, you're like a mountain ranger heading out on a 3-week bivouac.
Yeah.
And you got to carry 70-pound pack.
Yeah, you're only 15 steps from the nearest water bottle, let me tell you.
Generally.
Well,
generally.
My problem is I get dehydrated out there, and I don't stop until I'm thirsty. And my wife says, look, when you're thirsty, you're dehydrated, so you got to get there more often.
Got to get to the water more often. Yeah, in my particular case, because I have type 2 diabetes, a lot of the drugs that I use to ameliorate the blood sugars and stuff will actually dehydrate me, in that many of them are, expellents, I guess would be one way to say it. There's another more correct word, but.
Yeah, they make you pee a lot.
And so if I dehydrate out in the garden, the concentration of some of my medications goes way up because I have less water in my blood.
Get a little jittery, do you?
Or a little sleepy, or a little, So absolutely maintaining
the
hydration. I don't think of it as a garden tool, but boy, I sure need my water bottle.
Of course, working at Pride's Corner, we worked with a lot of fellow employees that would go to Mexico and then come back.
Sure.
And I would always ask for, please bring back one of those clay water jugs with the spigot on the bottom.
Pelotas?
I don't know what they are, but they evaporate water. They're just like a clay pot, but they evaporate water and they keep it cool. And I put it there in my garden, and I broke it, the last one, and I can't get them anymore.
Yeah.
Bummer. I have to take up pottery.
Sure. I know people. We can hook you up with that.
Yeah. Hey, don't even think about planting your seeds for spring yet. Possibly, maybe, in another week or two, those green onions. But the tomatoes, peppers.
We are right with February coming fast upon us. We are at that point where the first phone calls start coming in asking about, can you start your tomatoes yet?
Can I plant my tomatoes outside yet?
Leonard is preempting y'all. No, you shouldn't even plant them inside.
Don't
That's
even
crazy.
Think about
Don't
it.
Don't even do it. That's not right. It's just not right.
That's right. That's exactly what I was trying to get across, Scott. I'm preempty. But we'll get the call.
I know the phone call's coming sooner or later anyway, but kudos on trying to be proactive.
Well, thank
here.
You. I try. And congratulate Carol. She was watering the Christmas cactus and moving it around, and one of the branches fell off, and she put it in some water without even my suggestion that she do that.
A propagule.
And how? And it is.
Now you have two.
It is rooting.
Here, here.
So I suggest you go to work on those bottom leaves over there, break them off, and we'll root a whole bunch of
them.
Get
a whole new plant started.
Yeah, and we can give them away at next Christmas.
Ooh.
At Christmas gifts.
In flower.
Yes, I want to get up. But now it was so successful. It was so beautiful. It's so easy. We're going for the Easter, and we're going for the Thanksgiving.
Oh, we're going for the whole
We're going for the whole series.
The triad.
Yeah, the trifecta, as we call it.
Here, here.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for coming in.
A pleasure as always.
You know what? I don't have to do a thing when you're here. That's what I love about it.
And you hardly even get tired and talk.
I don't even have to take a nap. Hey, Bob, you know what we say, don't you?
Yes. We're all going to go outside and see you in the garden.
You betcha. God bless everyone. Bye-bye.